This is the Afternoon Magazine on AM 580 and online at will.illinois.edu. Good afternoon. I'm Celeste Quinn. Thanks for tuning in this afternoon. Across America, beginning late in summer, high school marching bands begin to ready themselves to take the field. From early morning into the evening, millions of teenagers are preparing to buoy school spirit in athletic competitions and in competitions against other marching bands. This afternoon, we're going to journey to Elkhart County, Indiana, home of the award-winning Concord High Marching Minutemen. Our guest and guide is journalist Kristen Lane. She spent a year at Concord High researching her book, American Band, Music, Dreams, and Coming of Age in the Heartland. Let's listen here to an excerpt from the band's performance at the Indiana State Finals in 2004. The Concord High Marching Minutemen, American Band, is a story of winning, to be sure, but it's more than that. As the band's director, Max Jones, said, "When I'm talking about state, let me be clear. I'm not talking about trophies. I'm talking about how I grew as a championship person, about you saying, when I graduate from high school at the end of the year, I'm ready to tackle anything in my life." Listeners, your questions and comments are invited for our guest, Kristen Lane, this afternoon. Were you in marching band in high school? Do you have a child or children in band? Maybe you have a story you'd like to share with us. Join us with a telephone call. The number in the Champaign-Urbana area is 333-9455. That's 333-WILL. We also have a toll-free number. That number, 800-222-9455, 800-222-WILL. Kristen Lane, our guest, marched in an Indiana marching band when she was in high school. A couple of years ago, she moved her family from New Hampshire to Elkhart to research her book, American Band. An award-winning journalist, she and her husband and two children are back in New Hampshire, where, among other things, she does commentaries for Vermont Public Radio. You can find more information about Kristen and the Concord High Marching Minutemen at the website www.americanbandbook.com. The book, American Band, Music, Dreams, and Coming of Age in the Heartland is published by Gotham Books. Again, the phone numbers, if you'd like to join the conversation this afternoon, 333-9455. That's the number in the Champaign-Urbana area. Anywhere else, toll-free, 800-222-9455. Kristen, welcome to the program. How are you?
Well, I'm fine, and thank you for such a wonderful chance to listen again to the band in 2004. I really appreciated that.
Yeah, it's too bad our listeners can't, we couldn't show them pictures because it's such an exciting performance. Although on the website, and also you can go to the Concord High website, and they have, they've got video, I guess, is what the word I'm looking for there as well. So.
Yes. Well, and it's interesting. I mean, you've just touched on one of the fascinating things about High School Marching Band, I think, in its current incarnation, is that it is nothing at all like, I think, what a lot of people grew up with, me included. It is so fast-paced and fast-moving and sophisticated in every respect, including its music choices.
Yeah. Well, tell us a little bit maybe about the themes of the shows that are put on now, the performances, and how they differ from a generation ago.
Right. Well, what you have, or I'll just do a quick history, sort of different kinds of marching bands. You have parade bands, and that's what, you know, later, in about a month's time, you'll have the Macy's Thanksgiving Parade, and that's a parade. When you watch those bands, those are parade bands. They walk down, you know, one side of the street to the next, and they keep on moving. They don't really stop and have formations. College show bands, what a lot of people will see when they turn on, you know, the football game on the weekend, you'll see then a band that may be in formation that faces one direction toward the audience on a football field. But the music that they tend to play is, kind of entertainment. In some bands, they'll play very current music, music that may be only a year old, but, you know, a hip-hop artist, say, not maybe a more traditional concert composer. The high school bands that I followed, like Concord, come from a tradition that's really relatively recent, maybe the last quarter century. And this is the high school marching bands that compete for, say, state or national championships. The music that they play is music straight out of the concert band repertoire often. So, for example, one of the bands that I followed in 2004, the Jasper Band from Jasper, Indiana, they played Samuel Barber's second essay for orchestra. Not a well-known piece even in symphony orchestras, and certainly not one you'd expect to hear played on a football field, as it was, and not with a color guard and flags. And that has been a long-standing tradition, partly because these marching bands are in a class, and they typically are graded, you know, in the class. So there needs to be this sort of educational, music education focus, as well as, of course, all the competition. So the band that I followed in 2004, Concord, was trying to combine the entertainment. They wanted to entertain the audience and also have an educational component. So Max Jones, the director, decided that he wanted to put together a show that was, he called, The Roots of American Music. And so he took the band through a version of African drumming and then through Dixieland music, a Dixieland medley, and then into Swing, 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 which is the John Williams take on the Benny Goodman classic Sing, Sing, Sing. So that was their show that year. So it was a walk through a very American songbook, but done with both an eye to entertaining and an eye to the judges at all times.
Yeah. Tell us about Max Jones. What an interesting fellow he is. He's such a leader, and he is about not only getting these kids to perform, but he's also teaching how to be a leader, how to be a teacher, in addition to how to perform.
Right. Recently, somebody said to me about Max Jones, you know, he's the kind of charismatic leader who could, and they were saying he could have become the governor of Indiana. Now, maybe that isn't true, but he could have certainly led, you know, a company or a business. And what he chose to do was to take his love of music and teaching and take it into the schools and become a truly great teacher, someone who changed the lives of thousands of people in several communities in Indiana. So he truly is a remarkable man. And I just am so grateful that I got to watch him teaching music to these kids. But you're right, he taught character education as well as music, as well as marching. And he believed that marching bands were a great place for teenagers to practice skills that they would use in later life. Your quote from the book earlier perfectly illustrates that. And he had a system, it was known as the Concord system, that he'd put in place that took students from their freshman year in high school in the band. All they were supposed to do was to try their hardest and never give up. By the time they were seniors, though, those students, 4 years with 4 years of experience, you know, under their belts, were also being asked to motivate their peers and the students below them, and to teach the younger students and bring them along in kind of that Concord system. And that was how you could have a band of almost 250 students taught by 7 full-time staff, but truly taught by many more people, many of whom were actually the students themselves.
Has anyone looked at, in terms of research, has anyone looked at the long-term effects of participating in band?
Well, there's a lot of research about the effects of music, but nothing that's been done that I found, other than anecdotally, that talks about that experience in band. But I have to tell you that anecdotally, the evidence is very strong. I did hear at one point, although I could never confirm this, that many elected officials were in marching band. I'd love to find out if that was really true. And I also heard anecdotally that there was an economic roundtable, say, in the last 10 years, where someone from a marching band state stood up and said, if you're worried about the next generation of workers in this country, you need to hire marching band kids and you need to support music education. I heard that story from a number of band directors, obviously. But what this alleged the way this story went was that, marching band students know they respect authority. They know how to, in fact, be authorities with each other, with their peers. They know how to work hard. They know the importance of timeliness and of good grooming. And then they have learned how to learn kind of on a number of fronts all at once, and then to reach for excellence as a group, as a community. And whether or not that story of the Fortune 500 CEO is actually true or not, I think those skills are very much in evidence across the board in marching bands around the country.
Sounds like a great dissertation topic.
I hope someone's out there listening and decides to take that on. Yeah. I'd love to see that.
Maybe somebody here at Illinois will.
Yeah, well, of course, the University of Illinois has John Philip Sousa's papers, and that's something that one of these days I hope I get there and look through some of them, because he's very important in Elkhart, where there used to be band instrument, it used to be the band instrument capital of the world. And John Philip Sousa brought his great band through Elkhart regularly to test instruments, and that's where sousaphones were first manufactured.
It would be wonderful if you can get here in November sometime next month. November here we celebrate as American Music Month, and there are all kinds of events going on, from band and all manner of things are happening, and including wonderful exhibits at the Sousa Archive and Center for American Music. So keep November open.
Next year when the paperback's out, I'll be there.
Yeah, there you go. Well, what inspired you to research and write American Band? What led you back to Elkhart, back to Indiana and to Elkhart County?
Well, the first thing is I went back to Indiana after having been away for a quarter century. I went to high school in Richmond, Indiana, and as you said, marched in a band. We were state champions back when being a state champion meant that we'd won the summer contest. We had practiced 1 month. We thought we worked so hard, and we had played a 4-minute show and had won the state championship then. And I loved that experience. It had meant a lot to me as a young woman who had been kind of picked on in the place that we'd lived before we moved to Indiana, and I had found a home in the band and really a chance to reinvent myself as someone who knew how to perform and how to present myself kind of to other people in a way that I hadn't before. So that had meant a lot to me. I had written my college application essay about being in the band. It had been important, but then I had gone east to school, west as a young adult, and I had learned to talk about my experience in marching band as a kind of joke. And people who leave a marching band community and go elsewhere may recognize this phenomenon outside the great marching band communities. Marching bands are still perceived as something of an anachronism, and I ran into that. So, but when I went back for my high school reunion 25 years later, I realized that I wasn't the only one who felt that I was drawing on my experience in band in my daily life every day. And I had done that. I felt that I'd learned how to work with a group and how to reach for things that felt that they were beyond my capacities and how to work at them bit by bit by bit. All of those were skills that I used in college and in jobs and really in my whole life afterward. And so to see that there were other people who felt the same way made me ask with my writer's, you know, mind, maybe there's a story here. And I did think that perhaps marching bands weren't as big now. And when I called my band director to ask him that question, you know, so how big are marching bands now? He said to me, oh, you have no idea how much bigger they've become. And so that, of course, set me off on my track to research the story and find out what that was all about now.
Why are they bigger today than ever before?
Well, I think there are a couple of things. First of all, in places like Indiana, Ohio, Kentucky, Illinois, in places outside the major urban areas, certainly, I think marching bands never stopped being big. They have always, there's a long tradition that goes back in certain communities. And so there, it's really the thing we should recognize is that they never left. But then where they have grown, I think they are, marching bands are addressing the needs that we have for perhaps ways to teach our youth these kind of character education skills, but also ways to come together as a community, as a broad community, even outside the ways that we can do that through sports. So in at Concord High School, many people go out and watch the football games, but there are more adults involved in helping the band than there are with any other activity in the high school. So I think there's a way in which there's a generational kind of pull from, say, my generation with our children, trying to make sure that they are developing in ways that we would like to see, and that band seems to work well with those aspirations somehow.
And am I correct in saying that at Concord High, there's a waiting list for parents to get involved as band boosters?
Well, almost. That you're almost correct. Not as band boosters. Anyone can come and boost the band and help fundraise, but band parents.
Band parents.
So, yes, so the band moms and band dads who work with the band on a regular basis, yes, there is a long waiting list, especially for the band dads. These are the men who They're the you know, fix-it folks for the band, and they help create the props. It's an incredibly time-intensive job. I mean, really almost a full-time job for that group, and there is a several-year-long waiting list. There are some band dads who actually were in the band the year that I was there who had to wait so long that their own children had graduated, but they were still doing it. It's remarkable.
How important are the band parents in the band's successes?
Oh, that's a really good question. Well, I would say that the positive results probably flow more strongly toward the parents, so that the parents actually, I think, gain inside, you know, in the end, maybe a little bit more. They gain that chance to be around their children and to be parents to other kids. But I would say that they are important in the same way that the students who are the juniors and seniors and are teaching are important. And that's just that it truly does take a large community to create a champion band. And by that, I mean it in the Max Jones sense. Not a winning band, but a band that operates in a way that includes everybody and helps everyone reach kind of their own best show or kind of own sense of personal greatness. And the parents do help a lot in that respect by reaching out also very broadly to the students and helping them feel that they have found a home.
Hmm. This is The Afternoon Magazine. My name is Celeste Quinn. Our guest this afternoon is journalist Kristen Lane. We're talking with her about her book, American Band, Music, Dreams, and Coming of Age in the Heartland. Listeners, you can join us this afternoon with questions, comments, 333-9455, the number in the Champaign-Urbana area. Anywhere else, toll-free, 800-222-9455, 333-WILL, 800-222-WILL. We have a listener waiting to talk with us. Line 4, Eureka, you're on the air with Kristen Lane. Hi.
Hi, good afternoon. I have a couple questions. I am familiar with the Concord area. I went to two different schools in that area. Has that band been invited to the Rose Bowl parade a number of times?
That's a very good question. The band, the Concord Band, was perhaps during the time that you might be familiar with it, known as the Giant Concord Marching Band, even bigger, if you can imagine it, than the nearly 250 students that were marched with it the year I was there. A previous director, the director that Max Jones succeeded, Joe Beichmann, made that band a parade band, and they did go to the Rose Bowl and to a number of other parades all around the country. That's really what they were known for.
Uh-huh.
So that might be what you're referring to.
Yes, and you sort of answered my previous question. Of course, I went to school there maybe 25, 30 years ago in that area, college a little bit longer. And I knew the name Joe Beichmann. My sister and brother-in-law had taught in the middle school, and they often referred to him. Do you know where he is now?
I'm sorry to tell you that actually he died while he was on the job. He was director of the band and had cancer and died, actually a relatively young man. He died at 46.
Oh, my gosh.
Not even quite 46. And the memorial service that was held in the then-new Performing Arts Center was full to overflowing, I think. 1,500 people came to pay their respects to the band director while a trumpet trio played a fanfare from the balcony. And henceforth, that Performing Arts Center has been known as the Joseph Beichmann Performing Arts Center.
Would you happen to know how long ago he died?
Well, let's see. I think it would have been January of 1985.
I see. Okay. Thank you very much.
You're very welcome.
You're very welcome. Thanks for the call. 333-9455, the number in the Champaign-Urbana area. Anywhere else, toll-free, 800-222-9455. Are high school marching bands largely a Midwestern phenomenon?
You know, they are traditionally a Midwestern phenomenon. They are, however, very strong in other parts of the country. Texas, I think, would like to lay claim to being the marching band capital of the country. maybe it wants to lay claim to so much else. California, outside San Francisco and the Los Angeles area or city limits, is also a very strong area for marching bands. And much of the Southeast, Georgia, Florida, you know, the Carolinas, even up into Virginia. So you can really, if you start to look at the United States, it is only a few parts of the country that sort of aren't marching band territory, but the major metropolitan areas, particularly of the Northeast, are not. You know, there are parts of Maryland that where I would say that's actually not the case. But for the most part, marching bands are a function of small-town life throughout America. And then the ring communities, the suburban ring communities of some of our larger cities. So Atlanta has many great high school marching bands in its suburban ring, which, of course, is a very large suburban ring.
It's interesting to me. I'd like you to talk about this. It's really interesting, and it's so much a part of the story of American band, the experience of marching band and how it dovetails with the religious faith of the band members.
Yes, this is something I didn't expect to find when I went to Elkhart. I went looking for a music story, a music education story, and really for my own experience, brought up in a new generation, so an experience of kind of having my life transformed and found a home in the band, and I did find that story. But for a while, I didn't recognize that the actual story in this place and in this community was something that had not been my own experience growing up in the Indiana of a generation earlier. And that was the experience of growing up in a community that was saturated with a particular form of conservative, fundamentalist, evangelical Christianity. And I would have to say, I don't think this is true of all marching band communities, but I think that it is much more common than perhaps we might expect. So these kids, when I would ask them, you know, so what's the most important thing in your life? Early on, you know, I would expect them to say, marching band, you know, we're defending state champions, mm-hmm. we want to win again. And instead, invariably, they would respond saying, no, my relationship with God and Jesus Christ is the most important thing in my life and my faith. And so I did, for a while, I thought this was a problem in the book. It's like, well, this isn't the story I thought I would find. But over time, as I realized that especially some of the leaders in the band, the seniors that year, they were explicitly trying to combine their experience with the marching band with their faith and to live their faith on the marching band practice field. And when I realized that part of the story, then I understood how those two themes and stories could combine.
Yeah, well,
and they do rather dramatically in the book.
Yeah. Well, tell us, don't give too much of the story away. I hope people will pick up the book and read it. Tell us a little bit about Grant Longenbaugh.
Yeah, if Max Jones is the adult at the center of the book, then Grant Longenbaugh is certainly the story, the student at the center of the story. When I met him, he was just, you know, the summer before his senior year, he was on track to be the valedictorian of his class. He had sat first chair trumpet. He was an award-winning artist, and Max Jones thought that Grant was possibly the best student leader he had ever had in any of his bands. Truly a remarkable young man. And I remember when Max Jones sort of told me some of these things early on, I thought to myself, well, he sounds like a great kid, but as a writer, I was thinking, well, where's the tension in his story? And, of course, I thought back to that many times because as the season and the year unfolded, there were deep and serious tensions in his life, real tragedies that occur in the course of that year that he has to confront. And I think it's probably not giving too much away to say that he underwent a religious crisis in the course of that year and struggled with his understanding of his relationship to the God that he was trying so hard to serve.
Yeah, interesting character. Another character I'd like you to talk a little bit about with us this afternoon is Kathy Green.
Mm-hmm.
We meet her very early in this story. She's an English teacher, and you say Kathy Green gave her students, quote, the room to speak.
Yes, you know, I'm so glad that you mention her. She's one of my absolute favorite characters in the book, and she does kind of a swan song there at the beginning, and then I let her go and let the students kind of follow up on what she has set in motion. She is the junior honors English teacher, and I start the book with a chapter called Prelude, because why not? It's a book about music. And in the prelude, I show her teaching her junior honors English class, Paradise Lost. And she puts together an entire class called, it's on Heaven and Hell. And she does this for Grant Longenbaugh. She does it for all the students, but Grant Longenbaugh is one of those students who, you know, teachers just have loved working with. They have just responded to his intelligence and his curiosity throughout his entire career, through the school system. And she tries to kind of create this class to help him develop a language, I think, for answering some of the questions that he has and to pursue kind of his interest in his own religious faith through English literature. And so she does this in a context, in a world where you know, it's perfectly fine to talk about religion in the, during the school day, but she's trying to give them kind of the tools not only to talk about their faith, but also to kind of turn it around like a prism and ask questions of it. So she's doing something that, on the one hand, might be very subversive in other school districts, but isn't subversive there. And then adding to that is doing something sort of subversive in that community, which is to try and teach these students who have been schooled to be obedient to their faith, to still have a faith, perhaps, but ask questions of it.
Yeah. Boy, what a curriculum. Paradise Lost.
Yeah, they read the entire book, the entire, you know, epic poem in 2 weeks' time. And I think, I don't remember, I think it's like 1,000 or 2,000 lines, what is it, a night or something. It's something crazy. But interestingly, this class just loves reading all of these great works of art. It's not just Paradise Lost, but it's also The Wasteland by T.S. Eliot and Dante's Inferno. She decorates the door to her classroom with red and orange streamers so that she's entering, she welcomes the students to hell as they come in at the beginning of that trimester. And then there's something sort of also wonderful about her. She's one of these just teachers who loves their students, who isn't afraid to really kind of love them in an almost maternal way. And she was wonderful to sort of counterpoint then against the AP English teacher that the students then confront in their senior year, who's this tall, kind of bony, angular man who's very sort of flat affect and whose humor is sort of much more on the Monty Python end of things. And so there's sort of this one wonderful kind of, you know, mother-father pairing for these students. But in both classes, they just get a phenomenal English education. It was so much fun to write about.
Yeah. And the kids, are these students, when they come into a classroom, are they open to it? Or does the teacher have to work to draw them into material like this?
You know, I think this is what's so interesting about this group of students, is that when it came to reading great literature about religion, they did not need much coaching to talk about it. And but you, of course, won't be surprised to learn that invariably their conversations devolved back into kind of today's culture wars. So there were numerous arguments in these classes about these, you know, great literature, classics of literature about homosexuality, abortion, the war in Iraq, which, you know, was still young at that time. All those questions were seen kind of through a prism of their, you know, their own religious beliefs and what they were hearing in their churches. And so for one of the students that I write about, Brent Lehman, who's a liberal Mennonite, so a pacifist as well as a liberal, he struggled in that class to feel that he was heard and that his own religious views were heard in the context of all of this discussion.
Also a senior.
Also, right. So he's also a senior that year, and he undergoes, you know, kind of a wonderful progression, just the kind that Max Jones talks about, you know, toward just a great adulthood coming up. He has learned how to overcome some of his own kind of personality characteristics. He was someone who was prone to get really angry when things didn't go his way. Imagine that. and really uses his leadership experience to try to work on that particular character trait of his and to become a better leader and a better person. And then just works, you know, very hard at his music and as, you know, reaching out to some of the other students. In fact, Brent, like Grant Longenbaugh and a number of the other students, you know, they were all trying to live their own vision of Christianity through the Sermon on the Mount. So really trying to reach out to the band's weakest members, and they defined that very broadly. So, for example, he took home, you know, probably half of the trombone section in the course of the marching season, younger students who didn't have cars, and really got to see and hear from those kids, you know, kind of what their lives were like outside the classroom in a really strong and deep way.
Yeah. Talk with us about maybe now a young woman in the band. Maybe you talk with us a little bit about Diana.
Diana De La Reza is another senior that year, and she's somebody, you know, there, all of these stories that I'm telling, although their specifics are perhaps unique, I think these are universal stories. So Diana is the classic story to me of somebody who discovers her talent for leadership and who changes a younger student's life by simply sticking with her. So she becomes the mentor to an incoming freshman, a young Hispanic girl, Adelene Corona, whose family has moved into the area very recently. And Diana, who had seen herself as just kind of a C student in the band, a C leader, you know, nothing like Grant Longabaugh. She was very clear about that when I first met her. She takes on this Adelene and two other students and works with them day after day after day through the marching season. She realizes in working with them that they haven't learned how to play music. In Adelene's case, because she had come in late to the Concord music system and so had been behind to start and had fallen further behind. And so she finds out that she can only work with them sometimes on their music on one measure at a time, sometimes only four notes in a morning of extra practices. And she does this over and over again, feeling frustrated, wondering whether what she's going to do makes any difference at all. And it does.
And at the beginning of the year, there's, especially if you're the, you know, Concord High Minutemen, there's got to be a bit of a temptation, maybe, I think, that, you know, you're just going to assume that you're going to be great. You know, you've got all this history behind you. And here again, you know, we're back to Max Jones. How does he begin, or how did he begin anew each year? How does he, you know, inspire his students?
Well, you know, Max, you know, had been teaching at that point almost 40 years. So he knew that being defending state champions was a problem for that band, because there would be some kids who, first of all, had worked very hard the year before and might be deciding that they really didn't want to work that hard in, you know, that coming season. And then there would be you know, kids who would be afraid that they couldn't measure up and so would hold back. So one of the things that he does every year is he reminds the band that they're nothing. And that's, you know, that's sort of the famous words. They are nothing. They are not champions. And they are certainly, you know, not even really a band until they have come together as a community. And so they have to actually go through a classic formation process. And by that I don't mean, you know, the formations they make on the field, but kind of a formation as a community. And they have to decide how hard they're going to work, and whether they want to be a champion band. And again, a champion band in the sense of kind of each student doing their very best and each older student reaching out to the others to help them become their best. And so you know, that's where he has established that system.
Yeah. Well, back early in the story is where we have Max telling the band, you now are nothing. And also what he does is he has a leadership workshop, and there's a fellow by the name of Dr. Tim who has come and spent time with students at Concord High. And one of the things he said, you know, is he tells the students, you can have a bad day in history class or math class, but if you have a bad day in band, it's not just about you.
Right. I know. I love that line. You know, Dr. Tim, actually, I'm sure there are people out there listening today who probably have had a leadership class with Dr. Tim, because he goes all over the country, and he is a marvelous teacher. But that is one of the things that he says, and he makes that classic point of the difference between music education, you know, or being in a band, an ensemble-like band, and other classes. When you're in another class, you know, a classroom, you can be the best student in the class and never have to worry about how other students are doing around you. And likewise, you can say, I don't care. I don't care if I fail this class. And your failing that class won't really affect the students who are sitting around you. And that is absolutely not true in marching band. Every single student's performance matters. how well they play their music matters, and how well they march matters, because those judges are up there, you know, like owls looking for the mice, the kids who stick out on the field.
Yeah. And it's also interesting that by the time the students are seniors, they are leaders, and they are charged with, bringing the freshmen along.
Yes, yes. And I think, for some of the students, students like Grant Longenbaugh, they had a talent for leadership. Brent Lehman wanted to learn to be a leader. But, many teenagers struggle with putting themselves out there like that. And one of the things that Dr. Tim says in his workshops is that being a leader means that people are going to make fun of you. It's very hard to be a leader. And he does these wonderful exercises where he'll have the students, clap. And, of course, nobody wants to clap louder than the person next to them. And so he really makes the point that, for many people, certainly many teenagers, and frankly for many adults, we just want to fit in. We just want to be like everybody else. And I think one of the great lessons of marching band, the way that people like Max Jones teach it, is that, if you are going to live kind of life as a champion, not winning things, not being the best of it, but just the best for yourself, you have to really put yourself out there and try your hardest, knowing that maybe that kind of leaves you open to people looking at you, askance. And I think that in an interesting way, he, like Kathy Green, the English teacher, was really trying to give these kids lessons in how to think and act for themselves, to do it while recognizing the needs of the community, but also to find their own ways to be individuals and to find kind of their individual strengths and selves. It's a very powerful lesson, I think, for all of us.
Yeah. At the same time, though, here's an interesting thing to talk about, perhaps. These kids spend so much time in band. Beginning, in the summertime, there's a mandatory camp, and then there's all this practicing and whatnot. And given that requirement, the time commitment, how do the students do in other areas of their lives?
Now, you've touched on, I think, an interesting issue, because as you can tell, I just think that what the students are learning in the Concord Band is wonderful, and that I think every student should have an experience like that somehow, and hopefully with a musical accompaniment. But you've pinpointed one of the issues that I think all band programs need to address at this level, where they're competing. The Concord Band has a 13-week competitive season. That's like a football team. And the extra practices that Max Jones asked the upperclassmen to put together were the kinds of things that I think helped create the Concord system, but they took a lot of time out of these kids' days. And there were students who I think reasonably kind of said, well, if all my classes, want me to do this, I'm going to have a nervous breakdown.
Mm-hmm.
And I think there's a push in certain sectors of even this school, of the Concord High School, to create more classes that you kind of do the same things that the music program does, because it's so successful as a learning community. But I remember thinking, boy, these high-achieving kids, many of whom are in the band, they're in AP English, they're trying to, do well in their science classes, and, if all those classes ask for this additional effort, you're gonna really create kind of a nightmare for the kids. So there's a tension there. Additionally, I think for some of the programs where you don't have someone like Max Jones at the helm, where he's clear that this needs to be, education first and winning secondarily. Mm-hmm. In other programs, I certainly saw band boost organizations, raising, $100,000 and more for props for a season, and, maybe a school, an educational system, just a little bit out of whack. So that it was more about the winning, perhaps, than the educational experience for the kids. And some of those kids did burn out, when you had like a 12-month or 10-month marching band season.
Yeah. We've got to wrap up here. I want to ask you, can you tell us about one of these individuals and where he or she is today?
Sure. Is there anyone you'd particularly like to hear about?
Grant?
Okay, well, I'll tell you about Grant. He is possibly, he's still trying to decide if he wants to go in the ministry.
Mm-hmm.
He had been taking religion classes. He switched over just recently to philosophy. So I think he's headed toward perhaps a career that that season that he went through in his final year in high school, I think, kind of pointed him toward. And then Max Jones, actually, the band director, that was his last season directing the marching band, and he is now an assistant professor of bands at Purdue University, where he's very happy to be working with college students and still just, you know, happy being with bands. You know, he hardly feels like he's working, I think, when he's working with marching bands.
And Diana, tell us about her.
Diana De La Reza and her twin sister, Danielle, are both at Goshen College, along with Brent Lehman. And Diana would like to be a nurse midwife. And I've told her, I said, yeah, I'm going to be too old to have children by the time you're one, but she will just be a fabulous nurse midwife.
Yeah.
And she's somebody who I think remains a quiet leader in all that she does.
Yeah. There, we've got to stop. We're out of time.
Well, thank you.
Kristen Lane, thank you very much for talking with us this afternoon.
It's been a real pleasure.
Kristen Lane is the author of American Band, Music, Dreams, and Coming of Age in the Heartland. The book is the story of the Concord High Marching Minutemen of Elkhart County, Indiana. More on the book and more on our guest at www.americanbandbook.com. The publisher, Gotham Books.